This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Know my guys, my fellas, the MGO blog roundtable crew, they're like, God, yeah, we love doing it, but what the heck are we going to talk about? Little did they know that Eli Brooks was going to come back, that Matt Dudek was going to resign, that Courtney Morgan was going to get hired, that, hey, seems like Xavier Worthy's on the fence again, at this point. So much to talk about, guys. Welcome. How you doing?
I like one of those bits of news.
Well, Brian, I'm going to do something I don't do a lot. I'm going to give you credit.
Is that be quiet?
Yeah. No, I'm going to give you credit for coming up with the idea of naming opportunities for the potholes in the city of Ann Arbor.
Okay.
And because I keep having this in my dream. And in a theoretical city council meeting, and it's your idea, so you get credit for it.
All right. Well, you guys don't want to know what's going down at city council right now.
Well, guys, we'll start off with the Eli Brooks news, because we had a whole like segment on if you had to choose one guy of the guys that were, you know, contemplating coming back. Franz, that wasn't on the table as far as I know. Zay, that wasn't on the table. So we are talking about Eli, Austin Davis, Shaundy Brown, and Mike Smith. You had to choose one guy from that mix to come back. Who would you choose? And I chose Eli. Who else chose Eli?
I think I did after Livers, because you didn't give us the option to knock people off, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't in the mix, and I chose Eli because I just thought he checked the most boxes. He wasn't the most talented of that bunch, but I think he filled the biggest void on next year's roster if you take those four out of the equation. So I think it was a huge get for Michigan. Brian, I mean, quantify for me what kind of land this was in retaining Eli Brooks in your eyes.
Well, I mean, you think about Eli Brooks and you're like, all right, he doesn't shoot very much. He's just kind of a glue guy. And then you go into, there's a site called Hoop Lens that we use, which does on-off splits. And so when Eli Brooks is off the floor for Michigan, they get worse in a lot of ways that you wouldn't really be able to tell just from if you watch the game. Like, it wouldn't seem like Eli Brooks was that key of a cog for Michigan, but he is. And getting him back and getting 30 minutes of super senior guard play next year is going to be really big, because if you look at the rest of this roster, the guards have no experience. So they might still be in the portal for another guy, but being able to get back a guy who's been around the block several times and can fill one of those two starting spots is big, because now you only really need one guy to come through, and you got three or four options there.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I've said this, for weeks now as we talked about it, Craig. You know, you look at next year's roster with what they have coming in, that's a more athletic team, but it doesn't shoot it as well as last year's team. So Eli coming back gives them some more shooting, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah, both your points are good. I mean, plus the front court is in pretty decent shape. I mean, you've got a good rotation there with Hunter, Brandon Johns, and Giabate. Is a nice rotation. I don't know if Giabate can play the four, because to me he's mostly a center, but it's still a really, really good rotation, and perhaps you can play Houston some at the four too, or even Terrence Williams. So it's the front court rotation looks really flexible and good. even though it isn't super experienced. The backcourt without Eli, it could be a disaster. Not because there isn't talent there. There's plenty of talent there. But if you're starting Kobe Bufkin and Frankie Collins or Zeb, that's no experience at all in your backcourt, and that's a problem. So having Eli there is a big deal. Eli is a competent three-point shooter, a tremendous defender. Juwan says he's the best defender on the team, and so it does solidify what you have in the backcourt on a team next year that isn't a, we don't know how they're going to shoot it, and B, there's going to be some growing pains with experience. So yeah, I agree. Eli is the right guy to have back. I guess my question for all of you guys is, Isaiah Barnes, actually might. I watched some of him this last week, and he might fit in the backcourt. It isn't impossible he could play a little bit of two. Although when I watch him, maybe I mentioned this, I have this fear he jumps so well that he's going to hit his head on the rim. And it's almost scary to watch him jump. Eli coming back is the best thing Michigan could have. But my question is, will they go in the transfer portal? I mean, I'm sort of thinking maybe they should not, unless they can find the absolute perfect guy who's gonna fit in with this team. I don't know what you guys think about that.
And that gets us to you, Seth. I'm gonna challenge you, Seth. I definitely want your take on Eli, but how much have you looked at the portal? If you were the coach making the call, is there a player in the portal that you find particularly, intriguing?
I mean, the top of the portal looks great if you can get one of those guys. I think you put an article together, and I don't disagree with any of it. So I would just say, go read Sam's article on 24/7.
I think that was Zach's article.
Yeah. Oh, that was Zach's article. Sorry, Zach. It was good. It was a good article. But yeah, basically the idea is, there are a couple options there that you just take if they're available, and if they're fit, right?
Really? I mean, do you take Adam Miller?
I don't know.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't know if I do or I don't.
Let's do this. Let's stipulate that Juwan Howard is not going to take any guy he feels disrupts the chemistry. It's right. Just a non-starter, and that's going to be a grand assessment. And my question for Adam Miller is, what are you looking for? That's a genuine, honest question. No, you're a guy at Illinois. And you're at home, essentially. What do you want that you aren't getting at Illinois? Or is it a issue with Brad Underwood, which I could certainly see. I could certainly see somebody having an issue with Brad Underwood. But absent that, why are you leaving Illinois would be is obviously a major question.
Well, Curbelo's kind of taking his job there, isn't he?
No, Curbelo's
Adam Miller. Miller's a 2-3. Okay. Yeah. My question is, do you take Marcus Carr?
Kind of seems like that's not on the table right now.
Yeah,
the guy I think we should take is Jalen Coleman-Lance, just because that would be funny.
Yeah, a top B-line recruit back in the day that was recruited when LaVal Jordan was still on the staff.
Uh-huh.
This would be his seventh. Wouldn't this be his seventh?
Seventh year.
He can shoot it, but, Is he a guy that's really going to help them where they need the help?
I know. Well, what are we talking about here? So we got 80 minutes. We got 80 minutes at the 1 and 2. 30 of those are going to Eli. Are you comfortable with Zeb, Frankie Collins, and Kobe Bufkin picking up 50 minutes next year? Maybe. I think Frankie can definitely take 20. I think Bufkin can probably take 10 to 15. But then, you're going to need a pretty big leap forward, I think, from Zeb Jackson. And that those things do happen, but it's hard to rely on them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that said, aren't you looking then for somebody who might come in and say, yeah, I want to go to school at Michigan, and I'm willing to compete at the position, but I don't have to be a starter or a 30-minute or a 25-minute guy. So then you're looking at maybe someone like Jalen Pickett, from Siena, or
I guess, is that necessarily the case? Because apply that logic with Shondi Brown in the portal right now. Wouldn't you think Shondi Brown wouldn't want to play the role that he wound up playing? But clearly he saw something unique in the opportunity at Michigan that made him amenable to playing fewer minutes and ultimately coming off the bench. Is it not possible that they could find a guy who had a bigger role where he was at that would be willing to play a reduced role at Michigan to be a part of a winner and to get developed like Shondi Brown did?
Yeah, that's a good question, I guess. And so it becomes a very individual thing. I mean, is Jacob Young willing to do that? Is Matt McClung willing to do that? I don't know. I think it's more likely that Pickett or maybe Terrell McBride from Cornell, might be willing to take that shot. But I don't know. I guess you just don't know until you talk to the kid and see if the kid is a fit. But I don't really think it's necessary for Michigan at this point, partly because I think Kobe Bufkin is closer to being ready than a lot of people probably think. Because I think even though he's skinny, he's a lot stronger than he's being given credit for. And so I think that, and Frankie can, the only question that I've got with him is, his shooting. But he's a freshman point guard, and they usually blow out, or they usually aren't what you hope. So
anyway. I think you got a pretty high floor with Frankie. And I think that you got to start right there. If you're going to have somebody mm-hmm. you're going to recruit over Frankie Collins, he's got to be definitely better than Frankie Collins. Otherwise, you're looking for someone who just wants to come off the bench and have a role as a Shondi Brown role, but more towards the point guard position than shooting guard. And if there is one of those guys, go for it. I looked over that whole list though, and most of these guys are just looking for more playing time, which is understandable. That's what you want to do before you get to the NBA. But Michigan doesn't have a 35 minute per game position available on this team right now.
Yeah. I guess for the right guy they might, but I mean, you look at the roster, and to me, if you could add a bench shooter, that would be good. Like a guy who could come off the bench for 15 minutes a game and knock down 40% of his threes. Like, but maybe Barnes is that. Maybe Bufkin is that. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I was struck by how, I won't say they dismissed the idea of. I was surprised by how comfortable they are with their wing situation. So comfortable that I what I sense out on the trail, because there were really strong vibes from the PV camp that he have some Michigan interest, and there was just not much in the way of reciprocity. So that screams to me that they really like where they are on the wing spot. Now, has that changed? Now that they know for sure that Shondi isn't coming back, I don't know that it changes tangibly based on that. Because like you said, Craig, I think they feel the same way about Kobe Bufkin. Mm-hmm. I think they feel like Kobe is going to be able to play as a freshman. And it's not like you need to put all the pressure on him, because you got Isaiah Barnes, right, who's, you could split that workload. You do still have a guy like Zeb here, who is going to be, in my opinion, barring a major improvement, which is certainly possible over the next few months, going to be more of a contributor in a 2-3 role than he will as a 1. You got a lot of guys that are going to be able to help you in that guard wing spot where you don't have to grab it. So, again, to not see them just jump in both feet on Micah, who I love Micah's game, it tells me they're really comfortable where they are on the wing.
Yeah,
I think there's a reason to be comfortable with the team coming up. But I mean, there'll be growing pains, but I think there's a reason to be comfortable. I'm sorry, Seth. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you got to figure John's has got the 4 spot, and Jabate is going to take the time there. So now you're down 1 wing spot already. That pushes, Caleb Houston's going to play. He's going to play a lot. So, there's your 2, main wing positions. Now you have all these options just to fill 1 more spot, really, on your starting roster. So I totally understand why they don't want to add another person. I mean, if Shondi wants to come back, you have Shondi come back. But,
he already declared, Seth, yeah. So that's not
going to happen. I'm saying, that was, the one guy that I would have, if you that guy wants to come back, you bring him back. But unless there's another Shondi Brown out there, they're pretty set.
One of the things that Tim McCormick said on this week's podcast is he thinks the approach is to sort of sit back and wait to see what develops with the guys who have their names in the draft. And he feels like some of those guys are going to pull out in a way that Shondi Brown did. And that's going to position them to, if they move, and it's not a definite, but if they move to probably grab one of those guys that declared for the draft but pulls out. Now, is there any guy that fits that bill that you guys have seen that you said, okay, I could, understanding that it would have to be like Shawnee. Shawnee played 10 fewer minutes a game, got fewer shots, came off the bench. Is some guy, whoever it is going to have to be willing to do that, understanding the payoff, because even with the decrease in shots, the decrease in minutes, Shawnee Brown's stock is higher, wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah, I'd say so. But that, I think that rules out a guy like Marcus Carr, right? Because Marcus Carr is a ball dominant point guard who really needs the ball in his hand to demonstrate his worth. And maybe on a team that's not Minnesota, he could get his assist rate up because he will have a shooter. And so is he going to want to walk into Michigan and maybe not have the kind of usage that he feels he needs? So, and then McClung's the same way, right? Like, you know, the guys who, you know, you feel like can help you are probably guys who are looking at Michigan's situation and saying, I need more buckets than this.
What did you guys think of, I know Zach, I mentioned Jacob Young a couple of shows ago. I know you guys aren't big Jacob Young fans. I just know that was a name of interest. He put Rasir Bolton on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you guys think of Rasir Bolton?
Isn't he?
Yes, he's not. He's a shooter. That's what he does.
I didn't want Iowa State to know if he had expanded his game at all.
Well, actually, it looks like he has, but his shooting has kind of tailed off. So that was wrong. I guess he could help you just from watching him at Penn State. He's a guy who could fill that bench shooter role if he wants to. The guy I was really interested in is Mirion Jones, but he committed to Florida recently, so
yeah,
that's kind of off the table. So you're looking at the guys who are currently in the portal, and there's not a slam dunk out there, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to the beginning, it's just got to be the right kid. It's got to be a Shawnee-like kid. And that's one we just can't know, and you can't predict unless you've talked to him, and we haven't. So
yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things, and I said this to Tim as we were talking. With Eli back, if they don't find a guy, I still think they're fine.
Oh yeah,
I think that they're going to be able to contend with Eli back to help nurture whoever it is they have in that lead guard spot. So. Ideally, they could find a veteran with some experience that could come in and shoulder some of that load. But again, this is why Eli is so huge, because he helps you bridge the gap, the experience gap that they're clearly going to have in the backcourt. So, huge.
By the way, I saw some preseason ratings of the Big Ten, and a couple of them had Maryland in the top.
Well, they picked up a couple of impact transfers and Fats Russell and Kudus Wahab.
Yeah. Did they change coaches? Because otherwise, they should not be the top.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, we knew it was coming. But I mean, this puts a lot of pressure on your boy there, Ira. So,
I mean, they did fill their two big roster holes from last year with guys who can play. So,
right.
I mean, I watched Wahab in the tournament, and I was like, okay, this guy is solid, and so he's going to be a big upgrade on Galen Smith and Jarius Hamilton for them, and they desperately needed an infusion of talent because they aren't recruiting like they have been.
Yeah, they're a team of wings who didn't have a center or a guard, so now they have a center and a guard.
Well, they've got both. So. So
did Morcell, is he still, and I haven't checked to see if he had made any sign. Why is Morcell in the portal anyway? That just doesn't make sense. Like, where is he going to go? Where is it going to get better for him than Maryland?
You know, it's one of those situations where I think he was a senior, right? So he's just, a lot of those guys are just putting their name in the portal to see what happens, I think. But yeah, if he wants to come back, I would be surprised if it wasn't actually at Maryland.
Yeah, gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we will use this as a breaking point, a halftime. And then when we come back on the other side, we're going to shift gears and get into the football side of things, where there were major developments in the recruiting department at the University of Michigan. We will dissect and discuss. We'll return here, MGo Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
You know what Marcel's going to do is he's going to go to the NBA just so he can play summer league against Franz. Fuck him up.
Marcel did the ultimate hedging his bets. He said, I'm going to enter the portal. I'm also going to declare for the draft. Oh, and I might come back to Maryland too. That was all in one, like one paragraph. It's like,
yeah. Look, it's too much pain in the ass to have Brad Davidson and Daryl Morsell back. I got to get rid of one of them.
I forgot about that. Yeah, Brad Davidson coming back for his sixth year. I mean, wow.
Where else was he going to go? Prison?
Good line. You should wish you would have said that on air.
This is, by the way, Craig, just because you messed this up last week, we are on air. Like, people can still watch this on YouTube.
I know. I'm sorry. I was waiting to get hit with a 1,000-pound craft hammer on that this week. Fortunately, I didn't.
I cleaned it up as best as I could on my
Thank you. Man, am I a dope on those things.
What did you say? I think I must have missed it last
week. He talked about
the source.
Yeah, about the hockey guys maybe coming back.
Yeah. It wasn't like that big of a deal because it was, but still, something I shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
So.
I gotcha. All right. So, you said we're back?
Back in 90 on the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Dudek released a statement. From Mississippi. It's going to be interesting, man. I mean, it's different ball of wax down there.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like you couldn't go to a, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like the culture would be the bizarro Superman version of.
It's going to work for Mike Leach.
Yeah, Mike Leach at Mississippi State. I don't care where you're from. That's culture shock.
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't know.
Hey, man, someone said on the site, and we can say this only on this segment. And this is not my opinion. I want to stress this is not my opinion. I'm just reading a post on the message board. And the guy said, Dudek certainly has a type, and it's weird as fuck. He goes from working for Harbaugh to working for Mike Leach. That was not my words. Not my opinion, but I thought it was funny.
I mean, I always thought Harbaugh and Dudek were pretty tight. I mean, I thought they were like even friends, but
business is business. Don't you watch The Godfather? Guys, we're back in about 15 seconds.
It's business, I guess, is right. It's all right, business.
Everybody
also worked for Rich for a little bit in Arizona.
And let me just offer up, I don't think anyone is as weird as Mike Leach.
Nobody.
The man is an island as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
All right, guys, coming back live on the radio. Take it to the top, Sam. Back in 5, 4, 3.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. MGO Blog Roundtable Segment 2 here on the Michigan Insider. Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, Craig Ross, and of course, guys, recruiting news. I had heard late last week that Courtney Morgan would be coming back to town. This was after initially hearing that Courtney Morgan was on his way to Mississippi State. I know Courtney from when his Michigan days came here in 99 as part of that class. Ron Bellamy was in that class. I think Andy Minery was in that class. He redshirted play from 2000 to 2003, but always a big personality dude. Got back in the recruiting game or got back in college football in the 2010s on Jim Mora's staff as the director of player development, and made some hay there, enough hay there where our recruiting guys out west, Greg Biggins and Brandon Huffman, swear by the dude. Well, he parlayed that into getting to the agent game where he had some success, but got that college football bug back and jumped back into it a couple of years ago with San Jose State, helped them to their best class ever, moved on to Fresno State after a year. And then just talking in coaching circles and talking in Michigan circles, I had heard the Court was on his way to Mississippi State. And so just randomly, guys, purely random, I made a call last week and I said, hey, man, what happened with Court Mississippi State? Is that done? And the response I got back was, hey, Court is on his way to Michigan. I said, what? He's on his way to where? I'm like, no, yeah, Michigan. Jumped in. I don't know if it was because they heard about him going to Mississippi State or they were just looking for someone, whatever the case may be. They got his attention and he is going to Michigan. And it's like, wow, this is, to me, this is an example of another example of what I thought needed to be a priority in the offseason as Harbaugh hit this hiring cycle, boosting the recruiting power, which was good. I mean, they were getting some top 10 classes, but how do you bridge the gap? How do you further bridge the gap with the teams that are, some are cheating and they have more lax standards and, you know, they are positioned in a part of the country closer to where some of this talent is aggregated. How do you bridge that gap further? Have you some more dogs, have some more relationship guys in your recruiting contingent. Courtney Morgan sort of fits that bill. So you have that. And then comes the news yesterday that Matt Dudek resigns and he's on his way to where? Mississippi State, where Courtney Morgan backed out of to come to Michigan. So with all that, I throw it to you guys and just give me your thoughts.
Well, I mean, we had this big overhaul in the coaching staff that was very focused on recruiting. So I think you kind of felt like the whole recruiting enterprise was maybe not satisfactory. And a lot of that goes back to the guy who's running recruiting. So I'm not particularly surprised that they made a move. And, you know, if Courtney Morgan has a reputation amongst the guys on the West Coast that he's an awesome dude, well, that's a good place to start. You know, how much impact this is going to have is tough to tell because, all right, he's coming now. Michigan is going to try to put together this class. Is that going to be in time for, you know, Michigan to kind of recover here and have a long Jim Harbaugh era? Open question.
Very open question and fair one. You know, can he impact things tangibly enough to affect the here and now? I mean, the only way he could do that is if he somehow, some way has an impact on Xavier Worthy. if he could impact Xavier Worthy, then I could impact the here and now. But short of that, this is all future cast stuff, right? You know, this recruiting class that they're recruiting currently, the 22s, you know, that's assuming that things go well this year. So now remains to be seen. But I was not surprised once I heard Courtney. I wasn't surprised by the news yesterday of Dudek's resignation because this was clearly Courtney Morgan's not coming here to be a number two. This is at least like co-number ones at least for Courtney Morgan. Right. So I was while I didn't expect a resignation by Matt Dudek, I was not surprised by the resignation of Matt Dudek. I'm curious how you guys.
Oh, I'm completely surprised by it. To be honest, I shouldn't have been based on some phone calls I had this week, but I'm completely surprised by it. And because I felt that Harbaugh and Dudek were pretty close, pretty tight. That was always my impression. And so I'm surprised. On the other hand, I worry that maybe this implies something we talked about in the past may in fact be real, that they're worried about winning games. I mean, real worried about winning games. And so they're putting all their eggs in this glittery future basket. And that this glittery future basket will keep the train on the tracks. And, you know, I don't know if that's, I mean, here's the truth. If you're winning a lot of games, it's a lot easier to recruit. And when you're coming off a 2-4 year, even if it's a COVID year and you're coming off, you know, various disappointments over the last few years, it's a lot harder. So, I mean, that's just it.
See, Craig, I disagree with you because I agree with you. We are going to lose games. We are going to lose games this year. This is not a good team this year. I don't know who thinks that it's going to be a good team, but if it is, it'd be really surprising. Who knows? It could be. But I don't think they're a good team. And
we have preview magazines to sell. Soft pedal it.
Seth and I are talking about 1893.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, so the future's what you got. And Courtney Morgan's another guy like Mike Hart or Ron Bellamy who you bring in. He can survive if Harbaugh's gone, right? This is a program guy. He's someone from the Lloyd Carr era. People love him. I remember talking to Cato June about him years ago because I was talking about Cato June with something else, and I was like, why do we keep losing the guys to UCLA? I think we had another recruit go in the Hoke era. And he's like, you know who's doing that? It's Courtney Morgan out there. He's stealing all these guys. And I was like, Oh, okay. So when I heard his name come up, I was like, that sounds good. I mean, we also heard that Michigan's needed to modernize their recruiting department. And I mean, you know, more organization, just have a better handle on things instead of just kind of the coaches doing what they do and then having a support staff. And I hope that this means that Michigan's kind of going in that direction.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the UCLA thing, because I'm actually going to write about this a little bit later on. So I'm giving you a preview of what I'm going to be writing on the MichiganInsider.com. But I got a text from Adrian Clem. You guys, if you don't know who Adrian Clem is, he's the offensive line coach from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Adrian had been the O-line coach at UCLA. And so he hit me last night with a text, and he said, Court is a win for Michigan. You can already see his impact before he's even set foot in Ann Arbor. I'm originally from LA, and it's something else to hear everyone back home tweeting, texting, and calling about Michigan and Court last night. There's an incredible buzz, and it's carried over into today. He's so connected and highly regarded by many of us, not just in the football community, but in the community as a whole. He's passionate about football and a proud Michigan alum, but what's most impressive is his passion for helping young people and developing young men. His respect for the game, fortified with his strong work ethic, would be a huge asset to the Wolverines. I know he was for us. During my time at UCLA. He led the charge in identifying talent nationwide, and his deep roots out west, strong ties in the east, and connects in the Midwest got us in schools that we traditionally had struggled getting footing in. I'm so excited for him, and I can't wait to follow the team this year. He's definitely going to make an immediate impact and do an incredible job. The dude sent me a book. Courtney Morgan, offensive line coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But that's kind of how it's been, you know, with when you talk about the excitement. I mean, so many coaches that, you know, it's one thing to get it from Michigan people, and you get a lot of exciting messages like that from Michigan people, but it's the non-Michigan people. It's the Greg Bigginses and the Brandon Huffmans and the Adrian Clems and the Kalen DeBoers, who was at Eastern. You guys might remember Kalen DeBoer was at Eastern before he went to Indiana, so we know him from that, but he's the coach at Fresno State now, and they all are like, this is as good as impactful as an off-field move can be. This is up there. This is up there for Michigan.
I mean, that is kind of the key, though. Like, as Seth mentioned, you got to win some games to get some recruits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might be a little bit of a tall order this year. So I'm happy that they've made this move. I'm a little.
Well, if Court is listening to this, you know how you make a splash right away when you get Xavier Worthy locked in? Because Xavier Worthy, look, there is legit concern. You know, as I put some feelers out, the rumblings are out. The Texas sites are talking like they feel confident about their chances at luring Xavier Worthy away. And as I put feelers out, I think there is absolute cause for concern.
So he didn't get to enroll early, right?
He did not get to enroll early. It seemed like that had settled down when he came, because he had been here for some time during the winter, just to come here and to be here and to be around for a while. But you know, this is total speculation for me, so I want to qualify it as such here on air. This is speculation, but he was really tight with Giles Jackson, and in turn was tight with Joe Milton. You know, Joe Milton and Giles Jackson were thick as thieves. So first Joe leaves, right? And then people are like, well, you know, what's up with Giles? So then Giles leaves after Joe. Now, I'm not saying that Giles only left because Joe left. Yeah, he certainly had some other things that maybe he was upset about. I know he didn't like where he was in the depth chart when he came back from rehab in spring ball. But it did not help that his guy left Michigan and was unhappy when he did it. So first Joe, then Giles, who had a huge role in helping lure Xavier to Michigan, and guys that when he comes here, he obviously hangs out with some. And then they both are transferring. It just speculating out loud without hearing this from Xavier or his mom, I just have to wonder if that's not impacting how he feels about Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I kind of caught on in that is that he came back from an injury and then he didn't like where he was on a spring depth chart. Why do we have those?
I said the same thing. I would not have a spring depth chart. I would not have a spring depth chart.
Everybody has their own spring depth chart that they get emailed to them, and they're number one at all 22 positions.
That's a great point. Highly advisable. I've never coached a game in my life, but I would not have a spring depth chart, period. Hell, I might not even have a set one in the fall until like the week before the game.
That's what I'm thinking. Why do you need a depth chart at all? I mean, they know who's going to play. They know what they're going to run.
Harbaugh doesn't even release depth charts during the season. Why do we have one in the spring?
Right.
Oh, why do you have one with the team?
This used to be a thing, like in 2015 when we were all like clinking glasses and saying Harbaugh all the time. It was one of the things we liked. It was like competition, right? Like everyone knows where they stand. And since then, how many guys, especially the guys who get injured and then have to like work their way back up the depth chart, how many times have you heard the story that guy's not happy about that? It's just, that's the policy that I hate. If a guy gets injured and he falls off the depth chart, he shouldn't have to work his way back from number three.
I mean, it's a different world now, right?
Well, I want to be careful to not make that be the reason because he missed all of winter conditioning and, you know, missed the beginning of spring ball rehabbing from offseason knee surgery. So reasonable to think that with time and when he gets back to 100% that he could earn that starting job back. So it makes me believe that there was clearly more to it than just the depth chart. To me, I look at the depth chart as maybe it's the tipping point. It's the straw that breaks the camel's back. But that just means that if it's not the depth chart, then it's going to be something else eventually, right?
You know, maybe like if you can convince this guy that you've got a major role for him, maybe he stays around. Like, I mean, this is the guy who had Alabama afraid to kick to him. And I was looking forward to a couple more years of Giles Jackson, and not having him is just, you know, the football team has been kind of a series of bummers for a long time now, and this is just another one.
It is. Yeah.
What do you guys think? I don't know if I saw this at MGo Blog or at your site, Sam, but I saw a chart of returning talent in the Big Ten. Did anyone notice that? And at the bottom was Northwestern, and at the top was Michigan. They had Michigan with the most returning talent. Now, I don't know what the most returning talent even means. Maybe it's just people on your team, but it just struck me as quite odd given what.
Yeah, you're talking about Football Outsiders, and it's a statistic based off of who played. So for them, Cade McNamara was Michigan's starter last year, and now he's back. So
okay. So
does the recruiting rankings factor into that at all, or is it?
Yeah, that's what I didn't know.
Just time on field.
I think it's just time on field and time in the program, but I got to go back and look at that again because it used to be. I think they reworked it when they lost Bill. Bill C.
Yeah.
All right.
Michigan, as I 24/7 Sports released to get to Brian's point about, or no, it was Seth talking about how the team was going to do this season. They were ranked as one of the 10 teams with the toughest schedule. They didn't put them in any order. So Michigan has one of the 10 toughest schedules in the country. And I'm curious if you guys, I don't know if you've compared it, but I wonder if you guys agree with that.
I don't even know what it is. I mean, do we play Washington on the road, or is that still?
Washington's coming to Michigan. Washington's
in Ann Arbor.
Yeah. And then we play the Big Ten East, which, you know, is fairly difficult, and you have Ohio State every year. And, you know, if you go look at Georgia's schedule, their home schedule is miserable this year. And like that's what a lot of teams across the country who think that they're in a position to compete have done. And that's why, you know, Clemson walks across the ACC every year and then goes to the playoffs. And, you know, that's when everyone else is scheduling down, your medium level schedule becomes the toughest in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a whole lot that's like, oh, this schedule is incredibly tough. It's just that they have a real opponent in the non-conference, which not all teams do, and they get Wisconsin as a crossover team. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
they wound up with that. I mean, we're getting these messages, and what do you guys make of it? Again, another comparative analysis, but a guy, you know, Don from Sylvania, Ira, he chimes in. He said, why is Michigan being hit with so many transfers? What's going on with Jim Harbaugh? Is it any more pronounced at Michigan than it is anywhere else in you guys' estimation?
Yeah, I think they've had more guys hit the portal than a lot of teams have. I think it's been like 18 this year. So that's too many. And, you know, I think, you know, Harbaugh has a reputation as a guy who's pretty hard driving. We've talked about the depth chart thing. And I'm just not sure that flies in a free transfer world, right? Like, I mean, last year I was talking about how, like, going into the season that Michigan should have had Kostar as a quarterback just because you want to keep that guy around for a season and then see what happens. And I think that you got to maybe adapt going forward and try to find a middle ground between driving these guys hard and driving them off campus.
Yeah, I think some of these guys, it was, you know, I mean, like Paya, you mean, you know.
Yeah, no one's making a thing out of that one except for, you know, Rainer Saban or something.
Right. But to your point, and this gets back to another discussion that we had. I agree with Craig or Brian. Agree with you, Brian. I would cease the regular depth charts. I absolutely wouldn't do that in the day and age of free transfers. But the conversation about quarterback next year, over the course of spring ball, Cade McNamara was the type. He was the top performer in the spring game too. Now JJ showed you flashes of brilliance. He also showed you flashes of looking like a freshman. There was a greater volatility when he was on the field. So you could get some wild plays, but you're going to get some more stalled drives and interceptions too. There are a lot of fans who chimed in to that conversation saying, well, I want the upside guy. I want the talented guy. I want him to learn and grow on the job right now. Let's do it and let's get started with it right now, because as Seth just said, they aren't going to be that good this year anyway. My response to that was, you're going to have an issue if you go with the guy who didn't win the job on the merits, number one. And then number two, when you talk about the quarterback position where you are thin, you're a scant anyway, who's to say if you were to do that, that guy doesn't hit the portal immediately? Immediately. So what say you in that regard, stipulating that Cade McNamara did or was the top performer? I can't say by what margin because I don't have the grades, but if it's let's say it was a close battle, do you still then even go with Cade McNamara? Because if you don't, then you're probably going to lose him, in my opinion.
Well, and you got to think about Bowman too, because he hasn't gotten on campus yet. Right. And in my opinion, all three of those guys are going to take the first snap. They're all leaders. They're all champions.
Hey, that may be a joke, but that's what Harbaugh should be saying. I expect
to say something like that.
I mean, the frustration for me as a Michigan fan is I can't remember the time we had a really good quarterback. And you know, you have to go back quite some way. And, you know, for most of my life as a Michigan fan, I couldn't remember the time when I didn't think we had a good quarterback until Lloyd retired. And post Lloyd, it's okay. We had a few games of Jake Rudock. And other than that,
Denard. Wait. This is Denard Erasure.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Sorry. Denard.
I will not tolerate this.
Okay. You're right. Denard. I'll give you Denard. Those teams were and were
also not 2013 good. Gardner was supreme.
Gardner, yeah.
He had some games.
Yeah.
All right. I take some of it back. But certainly since Harbaugh, and the one thing I thought we would get was quarterback play. And the one thing that Michigan hasn't had for the last, call it 8 years, 7 years or so, is quarterback play. And that's quite hard to understand for me, at least, why Michigan hasn't been able to put good quarterback play on the field as a matter of routine, or at least most of the time. And this year, who knows? But you're right, Brian. They should say, hey, all three of these guys are dead even. Any all of them could be the starter this year, and that's how they should play it. And in fact, it might be the truth. I don't know, or close enough to it.
Yeah, Rat Videos asked a question. Is Bowman a walk on? Didn't you or someone report that being a possibility? No. I did. It is a possibility. Raises my opinion of him even higher. Talk about a guy betting on himself. But Michigan was in a position, frankly, where they actually needed guys to hit the portal. They actually needed some guys to hit the portal to be, to be in line with the scholarship limits. But you do that anticipating that that's going to happen, that you're going to have some. Now, I'm not saying they wanted Giles Jackson to hit the portal. Yeah. I don't think that was in the cards, but they needed guys to hit the portal. And I still expect them to be active. I mean, they have got to keep an eye peeled for some defensive line help, especially some corner help, too. And I'm not saying those two positions exclusively, but those two positions especially. So it may be necessary to have some flexibility, and Alan Bowman gives them that flexibility. I mean, if a scholarship is available, then he's a scholarship guy. If they need that scholarship, then he's a walk-on. Well, we've seen, Texas Tech guys go, be a walk-on and have some success. Have we not, right?
Well, I mean, follow that thread, man. Like, how many of the best quarterbacks in the country have been transfers these days, right? This is just modern football. These guys go to a school. If you're a 4- or 5-star athlete and you're not playing, you have options. And the school has to act like these guys have options. Now, if you're not a school that's recruiting guys who have options, Michigan State, like, hey, where are you going to go? We want to transfer from Michigan State. We'll send your rap sheet along with it, right?
You're
not going anywhere, right? And so they build their program based off the fact that they're going to hang on to these guys for a long time. And that was good for them when they could play that way. That's not the world that Michigan's in right now. And you get a quarterback who's a 5-star and he wants to play and he's not going to stick around more than a season to see if he's going to play. That's your reality these days. And you have to be active in the portal and you have to be dynamic in the portal.
So here's the luxury they have with JJ. And I feel I can say this very confidently. He certainly is competing to win the job. He wants to be the quarterback. But if he loses it, he's not going to be, nor is his family going to be, we got to be out of here. I think they came in with the mindset of competing, but if he doesn't win it, he's going to be the clipboard support guy, ready to fill in if and when they need him. So this is not a situation where you got to fear, at least with him, that if you go opposite him, that you're going to alienate him and push him out the door. You don't have to worry about that with him. But again, Cade McNamara was the better performer in the spring. JJ was good. JJ's more talented. He has a higher ceiling. He's more promising. But the here and now, the better performer was Cade. If that carries over to the fall and you go the route that some of the fans want Michigan to go and say, screw that, just go with the young upside and potential, I just have a hard time seeing Cade McNamara stay through that. And that's not based on any inside information. That's just looking at, like you said, Seth, that's what today's college football is, which I'll close with this question to all of you guys. How will this change how coaches coach their teams? Ira and I were talking about that this morning.
Yeah,
you have to change your approach as a coach based on the ease with which guys can leave. Do you anticipate that being the case?
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a lot. Like, you need to make people feel like they are have a chance to contribute this year a lot more than you used to. And I don't know if that means there's more platooning in college football, if there's just more obfuscation of what the depth chart is going to look like. I think if we start seeing offensive lines rotate, that's going to be a big sign. I don't think it's going to get that bad, but if there's like guys rotating in on the OL, that's going to be like, this is a different world. And you just can't anticipate what you're going to have year to year. You can't just bring in a quarterback and plan for him to be your starter 3 years from now, because people just don't have that patience anymore. And I'm not really a fan of what's going on. And I think the solution there is to actually like have contracts that pay people. And then you negotiate an exit from that contract, maybe.
Yes.
And you have a commitment to a school and they have a commitment to you. It's a two-way street, but that's not the world we're living in right now.
Yeah, I can't see. I like that idea. I think if I would have heard that 5 years ago, I would have gone crazy. But I now like that idea. And I think you're right. And you've been right about it for a long time, Brian. And but I don't know how fans will think about it. And I don't know if that's a world that the NCAA will like all that much. But I think you're on the money and it's probably the way to go. We can talk about it.
We got the wrap-up signal from Ira Weintraub, so we're going to have to close it there. Another spirited MGO Blog Roundtable session. If this is the last one, fellas, you, my brothers from another mother, it is always a blast every season to have you on. So looking forward to next year if we aren't back next week. To the rest of you, see you tomorrow.